Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey.
Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy. Specifically, more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that LeelaQ's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. LeelaQ has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use LeelaQ for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount.
Hey there, ice bath lovers. Do you want to take your cold exposure game up a notch with some contrast therapy? Well, you should, because cold plunges and contrast therapy can lower stress, up your immunity, and even help you sleep better. It works better than just cold therapy alone. Well, now you can do that with the new Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tubs by Master Spas. Whether you want to relax in a hot soak or get energized with a cold plunge, the Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tub has you covered. You can easily hop out of the hot water, get in the cold water, and go back and forth. When you do that, you get better results in less time, and that's what biohacking is all about. Go to chiligoattubs.com, use promo code DAVE500, and you can save $500 on any Chili Goat cold tub. I have one in my backyard. That's chiligoattubs.com, promo code DAVE500.
Hey everyone, it's Dave Asprey with Bulletproof Radio. Today's cool fact of the day is that if you are a woman, or maybe a man, looking to pick a good guy, you should look for a man with a shorter index finger and a longer ring finger, because the finger lengths actually are from different hormones that you're exposed to in the womb, which also seems to cause these men to be nicer to women and have more children. It turns out my grandmother is really interested in this. She's a nuclear engineer by training, worked on the Manhattan Project, and believes that she has more testosterone than average women, in part because of that and just because she has this huge math brain. The last time I visited my grandmother, which was about a week ago, in Washington State, I walked into the retirement home where she lives, and she was watching a YouTube video about differential calculus. So maybe that's testosterone related, maybe it's not, who knows. But anyway, that finger length trick could be kind of interesting to know.
Everyone's talking about red light therapy beds, and for good reason. There's a company called ARRC LED that's building an entirely new class of LED devices. ARRC LED beds integrate proprietary scanning technology and frequency protocols to shape the delivery of 6 different wavelengths in dose-optimized photobiomodulation. Yes, that's a lot of words. What it is, though, is that photobiomodulation improves the underlying energetics of the cells in your body. And those changes can benefit nearly every tissue and organ and system in your body. You change your cells and you change your life. For more information, visit ARRCLED.com.
Today's guest is a guy that I met probably about 5 years ago, who's just an incredible guy. One of the first people to really look at what you can do to this environment around you to change yourself. He's also the number one best-selling relationship author of all time. He's been number one New York Times bestseller with Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, which is actually true. He's written 17 best-selling books, sold 50 million copies of his books in 50 different languages, and you've seen him on Dr. Oz, Oprah, The Today Show, Good Morning America, and every other person you ever heard of, and has been profiled in like masses of magazines. In other words, the guy's an absolute stud, although I don't think he calls himself that. I'm talking about none other than John Gray. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
John, you and I met when you were so kind as to visit the Silicon Valley Health Institute, the anti-aging nonprofit that I run in Silicon Valley, and to give one of the best talks we'd ever had. To have a chance to sit down and have dinner with you was really cool. And I've written a blog post or two about your work because, you know, looking at oxytocin and hormone levels as they point to relationships is really groundbreaking stuff. And you're one of the first people to really do that, to make it accessible to the world. And I've got great value out of your last book. But you're on the show today to talk about a new book that just came out that I think is maybe more important. I'm holding it up right now. If you're driving, you're not going to see it. But if you're watching on YouTube or on iTunes, you'll see it. It's called Staying Focused in a Hyper World: Natural Solutions for ADHD, Memory, and Brain Performance. Okay, you're speaking my language, John. Brain performance? I don't know any entrepreneur who's not ADHD or at least ADD. So what made you pick this? Given all the relationship stuff you've done, why did you write this book now?
Well, about 15 years ago, I shifted from my main focus being relationships to relationships and brain health, because my own personal life had a crisis, started experiencing early stages of Parkinson's. And rather than go the normal route of taking certain drugs for that, which only treat the symptoms, I discovered the cause for me and was able to reverse it. But in doing that, I also healed something I didn't even know needed healing, which is my whole life I've had basically ADD, attention deficit disorder. And so many creative, expressive, entrepreneur type people can get into that mode. And I had a great relationship with my wife. That's why I wrote these books, is I'm learning how to have it. But suddenly my relationship became super easy when I addressed the issue of ADD. And what my wife said was little things. She said, you're more relaxed when I talk to you. You're not in a hurry. You're not always jumping to the next point. You're not procrastinating doing things. And these were just things that were just part of her husband, me. That's who I was. And that was okay. But there was a shift that took place, and she pointed it out. Then I started realizing these were the typical symptoms of ADD. And I had a lot of them. You might ask, where did I get that? Because there's causes for these things, which is why I wrote this book. For me, it was a concussion in second grade. Concussions can exemplify or exaggerate these tendencies of hyper-focused, hyper-distracted, hyper-sensitive, or hyper-compulsive, which I'm calling the four different aspects, depending upon your temperament, where if you have this condition, which we're all kind of having today in this hyper world, our natural temperament becomes exaggerated and it can affect our relationships.
How do you know that this came about from a concussion in second grade?
Well, I just guess about that. You know, basically what we're seeing is that many people get concussions. Now, I'm born a creative person. Okay, that's who I am. But what I'm saying is what happened around that time is it was really hard for me to follow through on things. I mean, there were times my mother had to come in and pour water on me to get me out of bed. I didn't have bulletproof coffee to get me going.
I will tell you that my second grader this morning was hitting me up for, you know, a refill on her bulletproof coffee. But her cup is, you know, 1 ounce espresso glass, so she gets a half a refill. I'm fine with that. But it does get him out of bed, doesn't it?
Well, it does. And I'm just so happy that you just shared that. I don't know how much you share that. But in my book, I talk about natural solutions for ADD tendencies. We'll call it that. And sometimes people ask me, well, don't you think this whole ADHD thing is just blown out of proportion to sell drugs? And I'm not saying, if you ask me, should we be giving drugs? No, we shouldn't be giving drugs because there's natural solutions. And yes, the condition is actually bigger than most people suspect because they're just looking at hyperactive and hyper-distracted as opposed to hypersensitive and hyper-compulsive. So these are four different types that I see showing up in children and young adults and aging adults and so forth. It shows up a bit differently as our brain develops and changes. But what I was saying about bulletproof, I've been saying for years, I didn't know about your great formula, which I love. But parents will go to a doctor and a doctor will prescribe methamphetamines, basically, Ritalin or Adderall. And I tell parents, why don't you just try giving them a cup of coffee? And the parents will say, oh, I can't give them coffee. Oh, you can't give a child coffee, but you can give them methamphetamines, crystal meth, the same effect on the brain as cocaine. Yeah. It's really, it's horrifying. Now, I'm not saying every parent should be giving their kids bulletproof coffee, but they should try. If your child has hyper tendencies, what that hyperness is, this is what's confusing the people. If your child is hypersensitive, hyper-focused, hyper-distracted, hyper-compulsive, that means they're pushing too hard. Why do children today and adults push too hard? We're looking for stimulation, dopamine stimulation. And that was sort of the paradox when they discovered that giving kids who are hyper, giving them speed, which is methamphetamines, would actually calm them down. And to this day, the doctors say, we don't know why. Well, it's actually very simple to understand why, is that dopamine stimulates us. And if we have low dopamine function, then we're seeking always more stimulation. So if you give the brain more dopamine or allow the brain to make more dopamine, then suddenly you feel calm, relaxed, and focused.
So a lot of people don't know this, but when I was a kid, I had all the symptoms of Asperger's. Like if you take the very basic Asperger's tests, like I scored up there, I wouldn't make eye contact, OCD, ODD. And it wasn't until I was about 29 or 30, I was getting my MBA while working full time. And I was like, wait a minute, something's wrong because I know I'm smart. Like I've had a successful career, but I am completely failing at
Wharton. Like I'm like, I sit down to take a test. And I get 100% on the first question, 70 to 50% on the next one. After that, it's like my brain's gone.
You just space out. It's like spacing out. Yeah.
And I was like, okay, maybe I'm just stupid, right? But something wasn't right. And I went and I got a spec scan. I did a bunch of tests. And sure enough, I had actually a whole bunch of weird brain stuff going on. But specifically, they said, yeah, you meet at least the specification for ADD with some other weird stuff, which is, I think, a technical medical term. So knowing that though is kind of liberating to be like, all right, like that's something you can work on. And I actually did for like 3 months try Adderall, which was really an unpleasant experience for me. And it's one of the reasons I like Bulletproof Coffee. Like when I get my brain metabolism going, there's a sense of ease and everything. And I don't do that pushing too hard thing. But the creativity and some of the other skills that come with those brain states are intact. And every entrepreneur I know who's really outperforming has these tendencies, whether or not they were diagnosed or not. It doesn't seem to matter, but there's something that happens that maybe isn't all bad when you manage it right.
Well, basically, you're managing it very effectively when you're taking Bulletproof Coffee with the butter and the coconut oil and so forth. And what the whole function there is why somebody who was scattered would become more focused is coffee works through a different pathway than cocaine and methamphetamines and sugar. These are all high dopamine stimulators. Coffee works through another pathway. It's an herb. It's a healing aspect. And it doesn't overstimulate as long as you don't do too much. And I think that's the magic of when you put your butter along with your coconut oil, or the MCT oil, it keeps it from spiking so much. Because whenever you spike dopamine, and this is one of the first things in my book I explain is helping parents understand what's happening to our kids today. It helps us understand ourselves as adults. But what happens in the brain, if you overstimulate the brain, something gives you a lot of pleasure. You get really excited. That's a lot of dopamine. Dopamine is pleasure. It's motivation. It's focus. And it's interest. So whenever you hear something new and you're interested in it, huge amounts of dopamine gets produced. Pleasure produces dopamine. So when you have this spike in dopamine, if it goes above a certain amount, then the brain responds and gives you less dopamine receptor sites. So literally we have these little receptor sites, and before we feel pleasure and focus and motivation, dopamine gets transferred into the receptor site, and then we go, wow, that felt good. And then it's gone. So we have to do it again and again. Well, if we overstimulate, then you actually lose receptor sites. So if someone was to take cocaine, the first use of cocaine, they would temporarily lose 30% of their receptor sites, which basically they see this. And basically what that means is that life is 30% less interesting. Life is 30% less pleasurable, and life is 30% less focused. So what they now need in order to feel alive is now I need my cocaine again. So basically, it's an addiction to higher stimulation. And the major aspects that's happening to kids today to get this shot of high dopamine is sugar, carbohydrates. Okay, once you go into sugar burning, you now are spiking your dopamine levels. That would be one. Another one is video games. For teenagers and young adults, or any age adults, pornography is a major high dopamine stimulator. So let me explain how this affects your relationship. if a guy gets off on pornography, what he's just done is he's probably produced about 10 times more dopamine than sex with his wife. So he just lost a good portion of his receptor sites. So being with his wife is no longer going to be as exciting or as interesting. So, you know, if you find that you're enjoying porn, for example, but you're not getting off with your partner, you're finding them less and less interesting, this is because you're losing dopamine receptor sites. So what it takes is you have to fast from the whole pornography thing until you get really, really horny and then have sex with your wife and it will come back. Okay. So the idea there is, when you are hyperstimulated, you lose receptor sites. If you take away the hyperstimulation, your receptor sites come back up to function normally.
Now, when you were the assistant of the Maharishi, you meditate for 14 hours a day, but you were also celibate for much of that time,
yes,
right?
9 years. Well, 9 years.
Nine long years.
I love that time. I mean, it's hard to imagine, okay, now, but – you know, I had a spiritual practice. I had a mission in life. I had a purpose to become enlightened. I had a good example of a good guy, enlightened guy, and I was dedicated. And what happens in meditation is you're just channeling that energy in another way.
Yeah. And I did an experiment I was pretty public about without 9 years, but certainly controlling that aspect. And it does increase a lot of the energy that you have and all. But the reason I brought that up is in the context of what you're talking about. If you're into porn, you've got this dopamine resistance or a loss of dopamine receptors. Then, so you basically stop watching porn. You said wait till you're really horny. Is there some amount of okay, like I'm gonna essentially be celibate for a while, not just avoid porn, but just avoid any kind of stimulation whatsoever in order to reset the sensitivity?
Exactly, you reset everything. Anytime you deprive yourself of a dopamine stimulator, you're going to reset the sensitivity. And I think it's like really critical, even with eating food. You know, is that people need to stop eating food for a day at least, and then you come back to really enjoying healthy food. But as soon as you start eating junk food, what happens is you become desensitized to the pleasure of normal foods, which aren't as stimulating dopamine in the brain.
So what about these extreme sports people? I mean, Stephen Kotler's come on the show. He spoke at the Bulletproof Conference. By the way, I'm going to try and get you to speak at the next Bulletproof Conference, but we can chat about that later. But Stephen talked about flow states and how in order to get into a flow state, you need a dopamine spike, and how these extreme athletes are able to do superhuman things in part because, well, dopamine is one of four other neurotransmitters that they balance. That happens when, if you make a mistake, you die. You get the hyper-focus, but also this expansive awareness that allows you to do things that are basically not possible for people who are not in that altered state. Is intense exercise, other things that raise dopamine like that, is that also going to cause trouble when you're trying to reset your dopamine sensitivity?
Well, I don't know. I don't know his personal life. You know, I'd have to know his personal, what his wife says about it.
So Stephen's just like studied and written about the flow state.
Flow state is not overstimulating dopamine. I think no, because when
not,
I write, for example, okay, I'm in a flow state. I mean, I'll just go.
Yeah.
Without a question about that. So I think there's a mixture of GABA and serotonin and acetylcholine and dopamine, when you've got the whole mixture going for you, you're in the flow state. But I'm in flow state. I learned that through meditation and write my books. When I wrote Minute from Mars, I was in flow state the whole time. It was the easiest book in the world for me to write. I mean, I sat down, I'd been writing 3 months. I wrote 6 hours a day. I babysit my kids. Other ones I took to school, then I would write, and then it was like a magic time, and it was a good consequence, I'll say. But flow state, this is what can happen when you're in flow state for days and hours, is you can easily deplete your brain of minerals and nutrients. Anytime I go in the flow state when I'm really on a project, or when I teach a seminar, when I'm doing this interview, that's flow state, total effortlessness. I'm wondering what I'm going to say next, just like you're wondering what you're going to say next. There's no plan. It's just flowing. So in that flow state, you are like a race car, and you do use up fuel. I don't think you're down-regulating receptor sites, but I do know that you can deplete yourself of nutrients.
It's metabolically intensive, to do this kind of thing, because you're right. I go into flow state when I interview, and people ask, you know, why are these interviews so good? And I think it's because I'm in a flow state and I'm not planning ahead. I'm just doing what feels right in the moment. And obviously when I interview, you're the same way. Like we didn't do a lot of prepping and all that. Like this is just wherever it's going to go. So I love that you're talking about dopamine resistance, because this is something that certainly was a factor in my life. And you have drugs that can change the dopamine receptors. You have behaviors like eating a lot of junk food. You have porn. What are other things that are likely to mess with your dopamine levels? Do you have other things kind of on your list of things to watch out for?
Well at different ages, drama, okay? Couples start getting in arguments and fights. Anytime you're in danger, you produce higher levels of dopamine. Mm-hmm. And a dopamine is an addiction if you don't have a lot of healthy dopamine stimulation in your life. So for example, you are a successful person. I'm a successful person. I just wake up in the morning and I know I'm going to be successful at something. Therefore, I have a steady supply of dopamine. Success stimulates dopamine. Danger stimulates dopamine. So let's say that I'm a kid who doesn't really have a lot of belief in myself and family support and opportunities to be educated and be successful. How do I get my aliveness? Well, just join a gang and I'm suddenly in a dangerous situation and that becomes my addiction, so to speak. I'm looking to do things which are dangerous, which I don't want anybody to find out about. Arguing and fighting, yelling is a big dopamine stimulator. You're in danger at that time. That's the only reason we yell, is fight or flight. So some people are addicted to the danger. Quite often women and some men get addicted to overgiving. Okay, so basically, it feels good whenever you give to somebody, right? So if you don't have a steady supply of dopamine, then now, or you have the dopamine resistance, as you're putting it very nicely for people that understand that, is now I need higher levels of stimulation. So before I could make cookies for my kids, now I got to make cookies for the whole school. I need to have recognition from everybody. So one of these ADHD symptoms for women is overgiving. They feel overwhelmed. They can't give to themselves. They're busy giving to others. It's literally like you eat one cookie, I have to have another cookie. I feel responsible for you, I have to give to somebody else, I have to give to somebody else. And here's a mind-blowing stimulation of dopamine I'm about to talk about, which is grieving. Now, this is amazing, and I couldn't say this out loud because I'm an expert in teaching people how to process feelings and grieve, loss, and so forth. But you can become addicted to it if you don't have the right nutrition, because anytime you're grieving, it's a super high dopamine level. I mean, when you're feeling pain, huge amounts of dopamine gets produced. And at that time, you start depleting your body of all these nutrients. And now you crave that stimulation again and again. So they did a study at UCLA of parents who are chronically grieving the loss of a child. Now, that's the most devastating thing I could imagine, is losing a child. And so you're going to go through a grieving process. But what they found is that many never get through the grieving process. They're chronically feeling depressed and hopeless. They're on medications. They just can't get over it. They can't come back to being happy in their lives and fulfilled in their lives. So they did brain scans on these people, and they found that the same part of the brain, when they show pictures of the missing child, the lost child, the parent would start to grieve, and they would see the same part of the brain light up as if they were taking cocaine. So this is this dopamine-stimulating part of the brain. So it can become addictive. Any of these high dopamine stimulators can become addictive if we don't have the recovery from it, where our receptor sites upregulate. And part of it is we need, quite often, if we're overstimulating ourselves a lot, or if we're in the flow state a lot, we need to make sure that the food we eat is superfoods, nutritious foods to replenish the body. And also, if someone has done antibiotics, for example, often they don't have the good gut flora that can make a lot of the nutrients for the brain. So this is why probiotics are so important as well. Supplements are important. All these extra nutritious things, I believe, if you look back in the past, all of your great entrepreneur geniuses, your artists, your writers, your government leaders, there's so many cases that they were bipolar. They were schizophrenic. They had their highs and they had their lows. This is so common throughout history. You know, Mozart would hear the angels, write it down, and then he would crash and become an alcoholic and take drugs for a while. until finally his body would gather enough nutrients to rise back up again. So it's like if you're going to be in flow, you have to make sure that your diet supports you with extra nutrition. And the irony today is that most of the food people are eating are empty calories. So the smarter you are, the more crazy you can become.
So if someone was to, say, focus on eating tons and tons of raw green vegetables, get all the superfood nutrients in there, what's going to happen if that's like mostly what they're eating?
Well, you know, I don't eat. I'm not just a vegan. Okay, so I believe in healthy meat, and there's so many good nutrients that people have been getting from meat. So I don't know if a vegan diet can actually provide long-term nutrients for the brain. Maybe it can. I just don't know. I know that there's lots of good supplements to compensate for what might be missing in your vegan diet. But I'm not a vegan. I just don't eat the junk food, basically.
Yeah.
I'm a vegetarian, and I'm a what is the diet where people eat primarily meat?
I'm a lacto ovo beefo porco vegetarian.
Oh, okay. that's and you know, I live a very balanced life in terms of my food, and I don't demand perfection. That's the great thing. I've seen this concept where people go on extreme diets, and I go, anything to an extreme really doesn't work out.
Yeah.
And that if I was to be married to my wife, for example, to expect perfection all the time would make us both miserable. And the same thing with health. The body doesn't have to have perfect circumstances, but we do need to be somewhat smart about
it. And if you expect to perform at your high level, I absolutely agree. Being in a flow state or just doing a lot of stuff, whether it's, you know, lifting heavy things or whatever else, it takes more calories and it takes more zinc and more copper and all those micronutrients. And I found when I spent some time as a raw vegan that I felt great for a little while, but I couldn't bring it. And the idea that you can tune your diet so you always have the energy to bring it, whether it means bring it for a flow state or bring it in the bedroom or bring it to stay calm when you're in a fight with your spouse, it's energy and nutrient intensive. And like it seems like we could be better people when we have adequate nutrition because we have that ability to regulate our emotions with our prefrontal cortex.
Well, that's why that was the answer to the first question you asked me, which is why as a relationship expert do I focus so much on nutrition now and cleansing the body? We just got to do it. Otherwise, so many problems in relationships come down simply to nutritional deficiency and unstable blood sugar. Unstable blood sugar is a real key thing. You know, it was, you know, Dr. Atkins, I love that kind of program. You know, he had a very balanced perspective on things. Dr. Atkins was a revolutionary guy like you. He was really on the cutting edge. So many things he discovered that most people don't know about. He's just famous for diet. The guy was brilliant. And one of the things he found, he would test people. He said, any person who has anxiety, who has depression, who has problems sleeping, who has marital distress, who's bipolar, who's schizophrenic, who has dementia, any person all has blood sugar issues. It's fueling the brain, and you start getting insulin resistance and your relationships go haywire. And what we do is what people have to understand is just like you get the dopamine resistance, sugar goes right a hand with it as well, because suddenly we're getting the sugar resistance, which is insulin resistance. The sugar's not being absorbed. Now we're craving more sugar. It's the same phenomena where we're going out of balance. We have to restore the receptor sites for sugar. Now, what I found, Dave, is I have many friends who've given up sugar. They had insulin resistance and they gave up sugar, but they didn't heal the insulin resistance. It was literally they weren't being affected by it, but they couldn't eat sugar. If they ate any sugar, kabang, they were falling asleep. You know, their blood sugar would spike and it crashed down. So there's two supplements that I recommend for that. One is, I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Nieper from Germany, but he has a product called Membrane Support, which he bonded calcium, magnesium, potassium to something called 2-AEP, amino ethyl phosphate, to restore the cells. And I've seen that clear up blood sugar issues, just this mineral support. I guess you're laughing because you've heard of it.
I've been on calcium AEP for almost 15 years as a cell membrane stabilizer and kidney protectant, because I have only one kidney. You're the only guy ever to mention this out of more than 200 episodes on Bulletproof Radio. And it's on my advanced list of supplements for biohackers, but not my basic list. I had no idea, John, that you were into that stuff. That is the coolest thing ever.
I'm totally into that. It's like it's like a magic phone. Nobody knows about this guy. It's like one of the best. Everybody should be taking that to stabilize their blood sugar. It's just it's such a basic thing, because all of this stress that I see married couples happening, their kids happening, it all comes down, one aspect comes down to the unstable blood sugar. What we're discussing as well is unstable brain chemicals. But a lot of this craving for the dopamine is actually coming from the unbalanced sugar levels. We're craving the sugar, which now spikes the dopamine, which downregulates the receptor sites. And now we crave more sugar to balance the dopamine levels up. And then we have a society of people all becoming pre-diabetic and diabetic.
It's happening, and getting stable cell membranes is so important, because people sort of forget that your cell membranes are made out of droplets of fat, right? And so if you're eating bad fats like margarine and a bunch of seed oils, you lose that membrane stuff. But calcium AEP actually helps you to maintain flexibility and stability there. So when the membrane works, you can express insulin receptors through it. And also, if you eat good fat, it takes 2 years to replace half your cell membranes, which is why, like, when I started doing Bulletproof Coffee, seriously, I was doing 6 tablespoons of butter. Like, I just can't get enough. And after 2 years, I'm like, you know, a tablespoon, 2 tablespoons, I'm fine with that. I think my cravings and just my strong desire for that food changed to the point that now I had the raw building materials in my cells because, you know, it takes a long time to do that. So
It does take time. And just see, that's the key thing we're hitting on here, is that just if you've been eating the wrong things, just when you stop eating the wrong things, you don't necessarily heal. We need to have extra things to help us to find that balance again. And that's where the 2-AEP comes in great. Now, one is calcium 2-AEP, but there's also calcium, magnesium, and potassium 2-AEP. That's the one that I take regularly as well. It was membrane support. It was a later version that he came out with, but calcium as well is spectacular. There's something else that has to do with calcium, and calcium regulation is essential in the body. Anybody who's depressed, what's happening is the brain's generally not making enough GABA because there's a problem with calcium regulation in the body and in the brain. We know that, you know, heart disease and everything is the inability of the body to remove the calcium, so the veins become stiff and so much. So we want to regulate the calcium, and what we want to get for that is we want to have K2, which is why yellow butter is rich in vitamin K2. And so we have to have vitamin K2 to regulate the calcium. And not only does it help us for heart disease, but it also helps the brain receptor sites to remove the calcium so they can regenerate. So this is like such a key thing with the butter, which has always been an amazing thing for people to eat. And people go, oh, butter's bad, margarine's good. That was like really crazy time.
So
now, the other thing, when we talk about the calcium, vitamin K2 and so forth, we're also talking about when people eat sugar, one of the number one minerals that they lose, okay, is lithium. And one of the functions of lithium is also to regulate calcium in the brain receptor sites. So this is what they're trying to figure out, why lithium would be so helpful for bipolar people. Now, the truth is we're all a little bit bipolar. This is our society. We go up, we go down. We are the reflection of the stock market. It goes up, it goes down. Couples fall in love, then they hate each other. They get divorced, they fall in love again. There's this extreme high dopamine stimulation, then receptor sites disappear, we crash down, we feel somewhat low, then we seek out the high stimulation again. This can be corrected very quickly when we realize the power of lithium. Now, not lithium carbonate, which is what the psychiatrists give, but something Dr. Nieper figured out, which is bond lithium to mother's milk, lithium orotate. Orotic acid is in mother's milk. It bonds with minerals and takes them across the blood-brain barrier. So all you need is a low dose lithium could be beneficial for anybody who eats carbohydrates in their life or is experiencing high stress levels. What happens if you look at in nature where lithium exists? Lithium's in our food. Of course, our food today is greatly mineral deficient, but the food that has the most lithium in it is beets. Now, where do we get our sugar from? Beets. So when you have beets, what happens, sweet beets, you would normally have all the fiber when you eat a beet, which would slow down the release of glucose, but also you would get the lithium. So when people eat sugar, the number one mineral they lose is lithium. So normally we wouldn't need supplementation. We'd get it from our food. But today, because we take away the lithium that comes with the sugar, when you eat the sugar, the body utilizes its own lithium in that metabolism of sugar, and we become depleted in it. So that's another one of the miracle things, like 2-AEP, you suddenly get the lithium orotate in little doses. It's a very inexpensive supplement, can make a world of difference for people.
John, it was your lecture at the Silicon Valley Health Institute that first turned me on to lithium orotate, and I do it 2-3 nights a week. I throw it in the stack I take before I go to sleep. Just to make sure I have adequate levels of it. I don't eat a ton of sugar at all. But I think
you're in flow state.
I'm sure I use the stuff, especially when I travel, I tend to take more of it. But thanks for that. Cause I mean, I think your lecture was like 7 years ago or something, but I've been on that, on and off, mostly on, ever since then. So thanks for spreading that. I had no idea that was from Hans Niebuhr. And if you're listening to this, you've never heard of Hans Niebuhr. There's these incredible, like, savant genius guys when it comes to nutrition. I think Atkins was one of them. Yes. And Hans Niebuhr was one. And there's some others floating around out there, and you come upon their work and you're like, these guys knew about this. In fact, in the case of Atkins, his first book came out about the year I was born. And I have a first, you know, the first print run of the Atkins book. And I bought it early on because I was so pissed off that I was 300 pounds and so mad that this knowledge existed when I was born and I didn't have access to it. And that's one of the reasons that I'm interviewing right now, John, is because when this kind of knowledge gets out there, people can very quickly change direction. But for me, I struggled for about 30 years before I figured this out, just through lack of information. Who else besides Niebuhr and Atkins would be on your list of like top five, like most interesting health savants that no one's ever heard of?
Another one is Dr. Avicii. Did you ever hear about Dr. Avicii?
There's a book
on Amazon. He's the doctor who cured cancer. The unfortunate thing is none of his products are available to the public. The Congress and FDA shut it all down.
How do you spell his name?
R-E-V-I-C-I. R-E-V-I-C-I.
Oh,
he, for example, has one product that I used to have but then now became illegal to sell. I've got a lot of good products, but it never really made it in the market because everybody was concerned. He went before Congress and I think it was in the 60s and said, I went to Harlem and I gave out my supplement, which was a form of sulfur and selenium. And I gave this supplement to 2,000 people who were addicted to heroin. And they all went off their heroin within 3 days and they had no side effects except some tiredness in the process. Now imagine you have a supplement that will take away all the withdrawal symptoms of going off of a heavy drug like heroin. And he went before Congress and said, I'd like you to fast track and approve this. They said, no, it would cost hundreds of millions of dollars to fast track that as a drug. What he did is he was the forerunner of something I think is fantastic, which is the liposomal vitamins. That's the vitamin of the future, liposomal. He was, before there was liposomal, he was taking a sesame seed oil and other oils and heating them up at a certain temperature and adding minerals to it or sulfur to it or certain ingredients. And then they would become fat, they would become lipid based and be absorbed by the body. He was able to give the body very high doses of selenium if it was embedded in fat. And that's how he got the guys off of their addictions, is the selenium was necessary for the upregulation of the brain receptor sites. So they had no side effects. So he was.
And this was a selenium salt, not selenium methionine, right?
I'm not sure which one he uses. Right. You know, the only person left is a few doctors that still use his ideas. His niece is available in New York City. I'm good friends with her. But it's very hard. They can't manufacture it and sell it because of all the regulations, because these things, they have patents on it all. It can help you stop smoking, help you stop any sort of addictive craving. And what I believe it's the sulfur, which assists the brain in upregulating those receptor sites. So the best I can do for people, I mean, I got a big gallon jug of his stuff at my house, but I can't give it out. But MSM, which I'm sure you love as well, is fantastic. And it's also fantastic for dealing with the upregulation of these receptor sites. The body needs the raw materials to actually do it, along with good gut bacteria as well.
One of the things that I've been exploring lately is the role of specifically sulfate as a short-lived signaling molecule in the body. And there's one mineral water that has a lot of sulfate in it. It's San San Pellegrino, which is owned by Nestle, which thinks you shouldn't have a right to drink water, a slight problem. But this is a healing spring from going back into 1,000 years, people would drink there. And I believe that the reason that it works so well is because of this high sulfate level, which gives the body a form of sulfur that's even different than MSM. But the idea that this little bits of sulfur, which is really common in the body, could change how your cells communicate or could change other things, it's well borne out by science. It's just that no one talks about it, and then no one links it back to how you behave in your relationship. And that's why, like, I just love talking with you. I could talk to you for like all day because you've drawn the connections between these little things and then these behaviors that bring you up and bring you down, and tied that first to relationships and then now to just overall, I would say, ADD kind of stuff.
Well, you know, let's bring it back to relationships for a moment. But I mean, I want to talk about other really great guys. I want to talk about a guy from Italy as well. He's got some amazing things I'd like to share. But when it comes to the up and down, this is what goes on in marriages all the time. A woman has a much greater tendency to go up and down than a guy. A guy will tend to open up and close. Okay, so we come on strong and we shut down really tight. And then we open back up like nothing happened. Women will go up and they're feeling like, I love you, you're great. And then they crash and they're just like in an awful mood. All they can remember is the problems and the mistakes you've made in the relationship. And then they'll rise back up and act like there's no problems at all again. This is very, very confusing. And it's a natural difference between men and women, but it comes exaggerated with this ADHD type thing we're talking about when people don't have the right nutrition for the brain. And so one of the symptoms that I'd like to suggest to men is that when your wife seems to go crazy, okay, because men think that at times, what's happening is she's having, her brain is being flooded with emotion. It's not a linear logical state when she's filled with emotion, and you shouldn't accept it as that, but realize it's like she loves you as the sun's shining. There's a cloud in front of it for a little while. The cloud will pass as long as you don't resist the cloud. If you try to talk her out of what she's feeling, she has to now justify it and rationalize that which is irrational, and it's very confusing to everybody. So to understand that under moderate stress, the way women's brains are wired up is they'll have 8 times more blood flow to the limbic system. They're going to have an emotional reaction. It's not logical. It's an emotional reaction to a small stressor. Now, man tends to misinterpret that because men will have a flood of emotion when the problem is big or it's a problem they can't do something about and it's a significant problem. So when women have an emotional reaction, men tend to misinterpret and think that she's saying this problem is big and she's saying that she feels hopeless when really it's a passing cloud if you don't resist it. The problem with ADHD type symptoms is those clouds are bigger and the rain is bigger, and his tendency to get knocked down by it is much bigger. Because what happens is we've got these things called mirror cells in the brain. And when somebody gets emotionally upset, we mirror back. But when men get that emotional, it's like it's a big problem. And for a woman can get emotional, she really can move through it quickly if no one resists her. So it's like understanding gender differences is so important. Add to it this nutritional stuff we're talking about. It can make the problems escalate much bigger. And one of the key things to know about women's blood sugar is different from men's is that women are designed differently. Men are more athletic from the point of view we could go for long hunts before we would eat. So we regulate the whole cycle of lactic acid turning back into sugar. Men are much more efficient in that, so we can go longer without eating. Mm-hmm. For women, when they get hungry, when they get hungry, it's a sign that their blood sugar has already dropped. They don't have much warning for it, and it drops much further down than a man's. That's what the research on this has shown.
Oh.
And basically, when your blood sugar drops way down, your body goes into an emergency stress response. Your brain is flooded with emotion, and you have temporary amnesia, and you forget any good thing that's going on in your life, and you remember every mistake your partner's ever made. It's hyper memory at that time. And what you have to do is realize, get her some food. Don't try to talk her out of her feelings.
Now, you could get her a piece of fruit. You could get her a Snickers bar, or you could get her an avocado. Now, some of those raise blood sugar more quickly than others. Like, what's the best? All right, I'm just going to ask it, and I'll be yelled at on social media for this. But all right, when your wife is acting super bitchy, what's the best food to feed her?
I think most women know that women can be that way. They're not that way all the time. I adore my wife. I love her. You know, she's wonderful. We all have, you know, our ups and downs, but I'm sure somebody will give you trouble for that. The B word is not easily heard by women. Yeah. Although the A word, men have no problem with it. That's a difference between men and women. It's another difference there. What was the question?
When your wife or your partner's acting super bitchy, what's the best food to feed her? If we assume, okay, her blood sugar dropped. Now she's having an adrenal response. And I love the way you're phrasing all this stuff. Like, it makes so much sense. All right, so she has an adrenal response. What do you feed her? Is it an avocado? Is it a piece of butter? Is it a candy bar? Is it a piece of fruit? Is it like some low glycemic white rice or something? I don't know. What would you recommend?
I recommend anything that has a little carb in it, just a little carb, nuts and goji berries is the best trail mix.
Just a little bit of carbs,
just
right?
A little bit.
And
just
some fat to slow it down.
What you need to do is, what's happening is when your blood sugar crashes tremendously, if she was a fat burner, okay, and then that would be fine. But when the blood sugar crashes, one of the functions of cortisol is to raise blood sugar again. Okay, so what the body will do is blood sugar crashes, cortisol goes up. So she's actually feeling like a bear is chasing me, and you're the only guy around.
It's phenomenal. I gave a talk at David Wolf's Raw Vegan Conference and at PaleoFX last weekend where I diagrammed the cycle you're talking about. It's so cool that as a relationship expert, you've mapped out these behaviors all the way back to blood sugar levels. I don't know anyone else who looks at relationships the way you do, John. It's so cool to chat with you.
I love doing it. Since I came up with Men Are From Mars, always the biggest opposition was people saying, you know, you're just saying that. It's your point of view. And, you know, my experience was 10 years before I came out with that book of listening to women talk for 8 to 10 hours a day. I mean, I'd hear the same thing. And I, you know, from my spiritual perspective, I was able to understand it in a positive way and understand men in a positive way. But still people would go, where's the research? Where's the evidence? And what was so exciting is in the 90s, we got these brain scans in the 2000s. Now all this hormone information, blood sugar information. And all I want to do is understand, well, women are this way and men are this way. And then we can make sense of each other better. It's such a good thing.
It's phenomenal. And by the way, I should sort of plug something for you here. You do the Soulmate Seminar for singles and couples, which is part nutrition based and part relationship based on your first book. I have several friends who've gone, just transformative stuff there. And Lana and I are going to go to one of these things coming up here with you. But just the idea that in the process of, you know, selling 50 million copies of your books, you've also found time to put together a way to sort of teach people the high level, this is the behavior. And to go all the way down from how do you modulate your behaviors to account for differences in the brain and neurochemistry of these people, all the way down to how do you change your own by having stable energy levels in the body, whether it's ketones or sugar or whatever else. But I don't know anyone else who looks at the world the way you do there, but it is an incredibly complex thing to do to map out a behavior that's like up high where, okay, you know, I scream at someone on day 22 of my cycle or whatever else is, and to trace it all the way back to, oh, you're actually having more blood sugar swings there because your progesterone levels are low and your cortisol is too high. But you're not medically trained, right? How do you do all that?
Well, like you, I mean, I'm just like you. We're researchers. We love gathering this information. But I have everything comes from your reference point. And I have a very broad reference point, having been one of the few real experts on gender differences for 20 years. And then suddenly nutrition and all that comes into the thing. I'm able to constantly sort it out for women, for men, for women, for men. And the nutrition and the brain function and the hormones explains all the ideas that I would observe. Let me give one for a moment, because this is such a wonderful thing. One of the big issues that women have with men is that a man will be so loving and he's so present, and then suddenly he's like completely ignoring her. You spend a weekend a weekend in Hawaii, and you're having this wonderful, intimate time together. And what she's feeling is, oh, our relationship has gotten to a new level. Now we're going to have so much more eye contact and affection and interest with each other. And he's feeling, okay, I did that. Now I'm going to go back to work.
No, really?
it's hard for her to understand that. But here's a dynamic. In Men Are From Mars, I call that the rubber band effect. which is that men want to get close to woman. We want to go inside her. We want to become one with her. We want to unite with her. But then we need to pull away. And that pulling away is like a rubber band. He's pulling away. But once he's fully pulled away, he'll spring back. And then he pulls away and he springs back. And if while he's pulling away, she runs after him, he'll keep pulling away the rest of their marriage. He's always trying to get away from her. If she would just not always be looking to him for everything, give him some space to come back to himself, then he'll miss her. He wants to be with her, and he literally comes back to her. Now, it was so wonderful when I started understanding hormones and understanding this whole oxytocin estrogen thing. Estrogen is where women, where we feel dependent on someone. So here she is, her estrogen's up, she's in a relationship, she's feeling nurtured, her oxytocin levels go up, he connects with her, his oxytocin levels go up. Oxytocin is the love hormone, connection hormone, bonding hormone. As a man goes into the oxytocin world with her, you feel great, but oxytocin lowers testosterone. So after he's entered into her world for a while, and particularly with sex, if he's climaxed, his body is washed with oxytocin. He needs to pull away. There's a natural pulling away to rebuild testosterone, because testosterone only rebuilds when you feel alone and separate. If you're feeling connected, estrogen is increased, and estrogen suppresses testosterone. So there's this natural sort of dance with guys. We get close and then we pull away. It's not like we're upset with her, we're mad at her, whatever. We just need to go do something else for a while. And, you know, sometimes women say, but why? I say, it's kind of like eating a meal. If you're really healthy and you eat a meal, you don't keep eating. You satisfy the need. And men's tendency to pull away, then a woman goes, what am I supposed to do? You're supposed to fill your life up with things that you love to do, as opposed to depending on him as your major source of fuel. Think of a man as dessert.
Yeah, like go get some friends already or something.
Get a life have a life which is fulfilling to you, and he just adds something to it. There was once a woman, a feminist woman, who was actually kind of saying it in a dismissive way, but I took it as a compliment, where she said the name of her book was Men Are Just Dessert. And I went, okay, I'm okay with that.
Well, I noticed something. This dynamic is phenomenal, and it definitely matches my experience of relationships throughout my life. When I was testing Taoist principles about frequency of male ejaculation, if I ejaculate during sex, that there's like a 3-day hangover period. I'm like, look, I don't, you know, like just give me some space. I'm going to do my thing. If we have sex, but there's no ejaculation, then that window, it's like I'm happy the next day. I'm happy to be connected. I'm happy to not be connected. But it was much more even. So this wasn't about celibacy at all. It was just about like not ejaculating all the time. And it seemed to work, because I was more satisfied with life in general versus sort of a bit disgruntled for the next day or two. But it also meant that the frequency of interaction would go up, and maybe the distance of separation, or maybe the amount of time between separations, was less. And it definitely had interesting relationship effects. Any thoughts about that?
Oh, well, yeah. I was, as we mentioned briefly, a celibate monk for 9 years. So I learned how to send my energy up. And then when I came out to the West to do my own thing, it was my brother was bipolar. And I tried to help him with yoga, with meditation, and it helped a little, but it didn't do the whole thing. And here I was sort of really fulfilled in my life as a meditator and teacher of transcendental meditation, personal assistant to Maharishi. But my brother was suffering, so it was time for me to go. And I went back to California to study psychology. So that's how I got into this whole relationship thing, to find a way to help my brother. Psychology didn't help him either. But in the process of going back to psychology, it helped a little bit. That's how I discovered I had a talent for relationships. And it really emerged from the foundation of being full within myself, feeling self-sufficient, that I have a source of happiness inside of me. When you come to a relationship with that, then everything you get in a relationship is bonus. It's not there to fill you up. It's there to take you to a higher level. And the first course I was teaching was called Enlightened Sexuality, or Tantra. This is back at the beginning of the Tantra thing. And I was teaching men and myself how to have sex without ejaculating. And certainly you'll stay in this heightened state. And for me personally, after many years of that, I got prostatitis.
Yeah.
And my wife also actually enjoys when I come. So that's how we do it. Okay. And I'm okay with that. I now have a good sleep afterwards. If I have sex without ejaculating, I'm like so in my head. I'm like a sunshine. I'm kind of like this altered high state, a little bit hyper. And she likes it when I just go to sleep, basically. I'm not saying what's right or wrong here.
Yeah, me either.
What I'm saying is, you know, I have friends who teach the Tantra courses now, and they teach, you know, how women can have extended orgasm and go on and on and on and have many. And how many orgasms can she have? And from my point of view, this is my point of view, one's enough. I like to have it and I'm done. It's like I have the meal. I'm totally satisfied. I can move on to other things. But I could see when I was younger, I really loved the whole thing about how far can we go with this and so forth. It was all very exciting. You know, I'm in my 60s now, and I just love good sex, great sex, and it's ecstatic.
Yeah.
And you can be in flow state, but there's so many other places to be in flow state than just sexuality. So I'm not really into the extended orgasms and the I like to have sex last for a while, that's for sure. But it's not like this big performance thing.
Yeah.
It's more like a falling in love thing and being caring and nurturing.
It's awesome that you're just totally open to talk about that stuff, because these are things that everyone questions in their relationships, but it's something that's almost never talked about. So it's cool to just that you write about it and just can talk about
it. It's very nice of you talking about it. That was, you know, here I was as a yogi, celibate yogi, and for a year I just went around and had sex with lots of wonderful women. I was so interested in what made a woman happy. So I felt like I learned all this stuff that I didn't learn as a teenager. So that's what my first courses were. This is what I learned in a year of interviewing women on what makes them happy. And the courses were everybody just talking about what they enjoyed most about sex. And that was really the foundation of Men Are From Mars. I didn't know it at the time. But here's what most women don't know, is that when I have men talk about what is most fulfilling for them in sex, it was always her experience.
Yeah.
If she was, you know, totally satisfied and making sounds and orgasmic, that was the man's major fulfillment. That's when you felt really accomplished and, boy, that was great. And if she's just having sex out of obligation and she's not into it, that's totally boring for a guy and it will kill a marriage. One should never have sex out of obligation. At the same time, one should be having sex. So what are the obstacles to having sex? You know, I wrote a whole book on that one called Mars, Venus in the Bedroom. But, you know, these are the kind of things I get to talk about at my soulmate seminar, which you'll enjoy a lot. We spend a whole, like, 3 hours on talking sex. And you think, how can you talk about sex for 3 hours? Well, you'll have to come to the seminar and see.
I'm really looking forward to coming to the seminar. And I can really, without reservation, recommend to people listening, if you haven't ever read one of John's books, it's not what you think it is. So as a young guy, I mean, Mars and Venus has been out for more than a decade now, right?
Two decades,
right. So I remember when I first read, I'm like, I'm not reading this book. Like, this is one of those dumb relationship books, okay? This is, you know, the 22-year-old me, right? I'm not going to read that. And then I don't think I read it till... In fact, I know when I read it. It was when you spoke at Silicon Valley Health Institute. I read the Mars and Venus Collide book, and I was like, oh my God, he totally gets all this neurotransmitter stuff. And then I went back and read the first book and was like, it wasn't what I thought it was. So I can tell you, even if you're a little skeptical, one of these kind of personal development relationship things, no, this is real science, and it's actually actionable science. So any of your books is worth reading. But I got to say, the Staying Focused in a Hyper World isn't the relationship book. It's a brain hacking book by someone who spent 9 years as a monk meditating, doing those things that make you very keenly aware of the inner workings of the mind, and then applying biochemistry to it. So, like, this is a work that's just worth reading. But however, read all of John's books if you really.
Well, thank you.
I'm not saying that. Like, really, you have a new level when you write. I really appreciate it.
Well, Dave, thank you. And when you're holding the book up, it reminded me of there's something I just feel impelled to say, which is. You know, I talk about many of the causes. You know, you asked about when I hit my head on the ground, if that caused ADHD. There's many, many causes of ADHD that I talk about in the book. And the basic model that I have is if I had a pill that I could give you to take away a headache. Let's say it's a natural pill and there are no side effects and I gave you the pill for a headache and it works. It wouldn't work if you keep hitting yourself in the head with a hammer. And that's what people have to know. It's like they're taking extra nutrition. Sometimes they say, well, that didn't work for me. I had somebody write to me the other day and she said, he says, you know, I've been on antidepressants. I went off and started doing the lithium orotate thing that you recommend. And I've been feeling great. And then I got really tired. And I went back to my doctor. He said, well, you shouldn't take that. You should go back to taking the drugs. What should I do? And I said, here's to understand it. If you make a change to help your brain go into flow state or high performance state, very quickly, if you don't have other nutrients as well, you will become deficient in them. So what I told him, what you have to see is that you've been taking lithium orotate, it worked for you, but it also depleted you of your omega-3s. It probably depleted you of your vitamin C. You know, you need to get some extra supplements in there to sustain that high flow state. And that's really important. People sometimes make a change, they feel better, and then they feel worse. Because whenever you feel better, it's going to pull on all of these other nutrients that we need in order to be healthy and have optimal brain function. So some of those causes, those hitting ourselves over the head with a hammer, I'm saying this for parents that are listening because, you know, the big discussion about vaccinations, which clearly this is not our topic today, but if your child has a vaccination and you have a fever, my recommendation is don't give your child Tylenol.
Yes.
Tylenol is suppressing your fever. Your fever is there to protect the body from the oxidative stress, which is being caused by the vaccination. Your fever is your body's natural healing response. And when you take Tylenol, it shuts down your liver's ability to make glutathione, which is what's going to protect you from the neurotoxins that are in vaccinations. So this is so important. And parents don't know this.
Yeah.
They think that fever is dangerous. And up to 105 degrees, even for days at 105 degrees, has never injured any child's brains. It can't injure the brain. And this is controversial before, but now it's very well established that fevers don't cause injury to the brain. And the hospitals and the nurses and the doctors, they'll give you a vaccination. And they're saying, go ahead and take this Tylenol so you won't get a fever. Oh, my gosh. And if you have a fever, take some more. This is not the way to go.
Tylenol is a scary drug. And in fact, John, you probably don't know, I manufacture a liposome with the lactoferrin glutathione, so it absorbs throughout the GI tract instead of just the top. And glutathione is so important for cognitive function and for liver health. And to give kids something that takes away glutathione in the liver and puts them or adults at risk, like it seems like it should be like a prescription drug, to be honest, not an over-the-counter substance. It's a scary drug.
It's a very scary drug. And the other one that is the most powerful, it's Tylenol, which has acetaminophen, which is also in 600 other over-the-counter drugs. So people need to look out for acetaminophen, is Lipitor. Lipitor also is the number one drug in the world. It's also the number one suppressor of glutathione. And unfortunately, only about 5% of the population even knows what the word glutathione is. So we're helping to bring people to be aware of that. Glutathione is your body's ultimate antioxidant. And when people have ADHD, when they have brain injury, when they have dementia, when they have problems with their memory, when they have problems with Alzheimer's, all those things, if you measure their body's not making any glutathione.
Yeah.
So glutathione is our protection against all the stress and the oxidation and the free radicals that our life is giving us. We need to be able to make it. That's why taking glutathione supplements is so important. I'm really glad you have that one. For me, it's always been, and this is how I helped deal with my Parkinson's, which was oxidative stress in my brain. I wasn't making enough glutathione to neutralize the oxidative stress of being a high-performing person.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about high performers. When you're producing a lot of energy, your brain is very vibrant, in your flow state, you are making free radicals. People have to understand that. Is it, and your body needs to make the antioxidants to neutralize it. Then it's all cool. But for me, I wasn't making enough glutathione. And a big part of that was undenatured whey protein. Is it when dairy products are not cooked, they're good for you. And undenatured whey protein is magnificent for producing glutathione, helping your body make glutathione. These are like the magic formulas for people. You know, I started doing this wonderful shake every day along with goji berries, goji berries. And this is before the goji berry phase. I helped found Himalayan goji berry and brought it to the West.
Nice.
Which is, I was in Tibet climbing a mountain, almost died of hypothermia. And the people that rescued me were all drinking this little goji berry tea. And they're like big, vibrant people. And I'm like, what is this stuff? And it's an amazing substance, a tremendous adaptogen helping the adrenals. It has such concentrated vitamin C as just one of its properties, but that is something that anybody can benefit from, is putting those superfoods in your shakes, is goji berries.
Well, John, I feel like I could talk to you for about five more hours, and we're coming up on the end of the show, and there's a question I've got to ask you, because I've asked everyone on the show, and your answers are going to be unique, I think. If you had three pieces of advice, given everything that you've learned in your life, the most three important pieces of advice for someone who wants to perform better in life, perform better at whatever they're here to do. They might be a mom or a dad or an artist or a professional athlete. Doesn't matter. You want to perform better. These three things matter most. What are they?
You need to have your basis in yourself, some form of meditation, some sort of activity to calm and find an inner fulfillment inside, which frees you from overdependence on others to find your fulfillment. It's a basis. So you've got to have some practice, which is your basis. The second is love, is that we need to be experiencing love in our lives. And in an intimate relationship, if you can have that love, it can take you to the highest level. Having children, of course, takes you to another level. But the challenging one is intimate relationship. And in that relationship, you learn, if it's going to be successful, the second point is how to give freely without blame when it doesn't come back. But taking responsibility for how can I adjust what I give to get back what I need. It's a sharing relationship, but we tend to blame out. And if you can learning how to explore, how did I bring out the worst in my partner rather than how can I bring out the best in my partner? This is a whole trajectory of learning. It's a lifetime lesson of how to keep bringing out the best in others and give your love in that process. So one is your own connection to your true self. And following your dream, following your truth, being authentic, that's the foundation. Then comes love, and then comes the third one is being responsible to your body and your brain. It's such a priority today. You know, in the Eastern ideas of enlightenment, you know, you could follow these paths of enlightenment. Nobody had to worry about nutrition because they were all eating organic food. The milk wasn't polluted. The water wasn't polluted. The air wasn't polluted. There wasn't mineral deficiencies, so people didn't have to worry so much about diet in those days. They just needed to find their inner self, and they could be more loving in their relationships. Today, we have so many more challenges, but the benefits can be so much greater with the higher consciousness that we have available to us.
Awesome, amazing answers, as I would have expected. Tell people where they should go to learn more about your work and specifically to get staying focused in a hyper world, because this book is not like your other books and it's worth reading first.
Well, thank you very much. So Staying Focused is, you can go to Amazon. It's only available on Amazon. It's an easy ebook, or you can get the actual book there, paperback. And you can also go to my website, marsvenus.com. I've got hundreds of blogs on relationships and all the kind of health issues. I also do blogs on those little 10-minute blogs on how the body works, the brain works, the hormone works, and different kind of supplements and nutrients that can help us. And I just want to say, as we're closing here, I'm a big fan of Bulletproof coffee, and I have my Bulletproof in the morning and my butter with it, my coconut oil in it. And I also, I add egg yolks to mine. Yeah. You can also, have you ever tried that?
Absolutely. I've done that on and off for a long time to get the lecithin in. And Mark Sisson also has written about, I forget what he calls it, something about egg coffee. He has a primal egg coffee.
That's right, egg coffee.
Yeah. And it sounds gross, but it's actually like ice cream when you do that. It's really good.
It's delicious. And one of the benefits of it is the choline, which many people are not getting enough choline for our memories. So memory, particularly at my age, memory is a really key thing. To keep that fast. And if you're just stimulating dopamine, it does improve your memory, but it's also depleting you of acetylcholine in the brain. So making sure that you're getting lots of choline, and egg yolks are a really good source of choline.
And that's why if someone says they want the egg white omelet, you just raise your hand and say, I'll take the yolks, and then everybody wins.
That's right. That's right. It's my favorite. Egg yolks. They're heaven's gift. That's all. That's at marsvenus.com. Thanks for letting me talk about it. And people can find out more information about my soulmate seminar there as well.
John, it was an honor to have you on the show, and just a great pleasure to chat with you. And I look forward to seeing you at your next seminar. Maybe not the next one, but the next one where I can arrange to be there.
Very cool. And I'll look forward to being at your event as well. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye. If you enjoyed today's episode, you know what to do. Go out there and check out Staying Focused in a Hyper World. I don't have just anyone on the show. I have amazing people on the show. And this is one of the most amazing guys who knows about relationships, knows about your brain. He's not a doctor. He's a biohacker, even if he doesn't call himself that. Thanks again, John.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.